go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Once more, 18 minutes later, with feeling. My apologies. But we're on. We're live. This program is live. I have not disappeared. I have not taken an early weekend. It is the fourth day of December, 2015. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. A bunch of Horndonistas are already gathered in the Horn chat room. And you, too, can do the same by going to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom, picking out a screen name and a password, and bang, you'll be right there. Good evening to Anatole and Jug of Punch and King of Cups and Labor Man and Texas Tea and Tim from L.A., as well as longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chatroom moderators Lottie and Sparky. There we are, the real-time multimedia madcap extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Yeah, I don't know. King of Cups says, I think the ISPs are on to you, you liberal commie talker, you. Yeah, still seeing 48K broadband stream still dead. Well, I got in touch with Ben Birch. Ben has reset the streamer, I got in touch with Ben. Ben has reset the stream server, so maybe it's a matter of resetting one's media player. One never knows. But I'm very glad to actually be live for the program this evening. Thank you, Asa, Brother Deacon Asa in Vancouver, for letting me know you're live. As in, I'm live. Yeah. Who knows? Maybe Tim from LA is right. Maybe it's just Agent Fred funning around here in the holiday season. Thank you, Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions. Carol says, I can hear ye. I am glad ye can hear me out there at the Ballerina Princess Swan Lake. Just a stone's throw away from the Ballerina Princess Swan Lake Trailer Court Country Club. And, well, yeah. Hooterville at its finest. This is The Horn, yes, this is a live program. And thank you, Kim from New York, letting me know. I can hear you now. Yeah, radio, Helen, it has a name. That's the way I feel sometimes around here. Is it going to be radio tonight? I don't know. But yes, we are. I don't know what... don't really know what to do about that. Billable Rick says, I can hear you on TuneIn, but you sound like to me you're talking to me from the bottom of the well. Well, that's because Timmy hasn't gotten here to get me out of the bottom of it. So hopefully we're going again. Hopefully. It is Friday on the front porch, and here in about 38 minutes or so, with any luck at all, we will crank up the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that is every Friday on the Horn. Let's see. Hey, Bob, where were you this afternoon? I was getting a gizmo worked on. Yes. So we shall see, and if we have to replace that sucker, we'll do that. But hopefully we won't. What did I not say? Lassie? Tim says, You mean Lassie? Yeah, I meant Lassie. Well, it all goes by so quickly. Sometimes I just can't keep up. There we are. The Ballerina Swan Lake Mobile Home Trailer Park and Country Club. Somebody needs to write a song at some point. Okay, it continues to be bizarre, apparently. A note coming in from Robert in Oz. I can't get you on my usual connections, but I can get you on Stitcher, so I've plugged in my iPod into my El Cheapo speakers, and you're sounding fine. That's still a little too bizarre for my tastes, but thank you for being determined enough to do that, Robert. Thank you very kindly. Okay, no, that's what I said. Little Timmy hasn't come to find that I'm down the well, where maybe I was down the well with Little Timmy. Who knows? It's too early to drink. But anyway, so I was getting a gizmo worked on, and then I headed on home as quick as I possibly could. A little reminder, we come into the end of the week with a deficit, as seems like we so often times the case. We need to raise about $340 this evening. We pulled up 180 short last night, but thank you very kindly to Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, as well as subscribers. We took a little bit of a bite out of that overnight. Thanks very kindly to Jenny and to Betsy, and like I said, to Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, and to Catherine. Thank you, Catherine. Thank you very kindly. I'm sorry, 330. 330 we need to raise this evening. Billable Rick says, Bob, it's never too early to drink. What else are you going to do at the bottom of a well? True enough. And you know, that's that unassailable lawyerly logic for which Billable Rick is so well known in our little community. That's just bizarre. Gerald says, still getting no juice on the stream. And Asa says, at Billable Rick, yes, it's automatically reverting to the 8K stream. Sparky tells me it only plays on the 16K stream. Okay. What in the wide, wide world of sports is a going on here? I don't know. Okay, and that, and that, and... Okay, so I don't know, but I think some form of radio is getting out. Or at least, I'm daring to hope that it is. And I was really, I had every hope in the world that we would get, get a break from from reports from Murderland, but no, sorry. No, the tender fifis of the lawful gun owners must be respected, or they'll cry and have a hissy fit and tell us that we won't be able to protect ourselves when the jackbooted government comes to put its jackboots down on our patriotic necks right next to our Confederate flag tattoo. Bunch of sissies. Oh, that's a bad word, I guess. Pusillanimous little creeps. No. It was soccer practice. Soccer practice at the Taylor Sportsplex in Michigan. When shots rang out. Apparently, an individual named Timothy Nelson Obishaw was a friend of the family and had gone to soccer practice with Emma Noling, now Noling, and her mother, Sharon Watson, at the Taylor Sportsplex up in Michigan. Mm-hmm. Soccer practice was over. It's time to go home. Oh, by the way, Timothy Nelson Obishaw had been experiencing, and I suppose this is a real live, honest-to-goodness diagnosis term, he'd been experiencing paranoia. And he thought somebody was out to get him. And thought that someone, them, they, one wonders if he was listening to Alex Jones, were out to get him using mind control, I guess presumably reaching him through the fillings in his teeth or the steel plate in his head or what have you. But anyway, he was all paranoided up. But you know what? That does not interfere here in Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, under God, indivisible. That does not interfere with one's right to have a concealed carry permit, and so that's what Timothy Nelson Obishaw was doing. He was concealed carrying a 9mm semi-automatic pistol. Mm-hmm. In the past, Timothy Nelson Obishaw had gone to little Emma Noling's soccer practice, and, about 8 o'clock yesterday evening, witnesses saw him flip out and fire his Second Amendment freedom protector into the vehicle where little 7-year-old Emma Noling and her mother Sharon Watson were. Little 7-year-old Emma Noling is dead. Mama Sharon Watson is apparently going to survive, although as time passes, she will probably wish that she had not. There in the hospital, the news report says that she has been informed of the fact that her 7-year-old daughter is dead. A mentally ill white guy, let's just recap. A mentally ill white guy who would have killed no one except Obama isn't spending enough on mental health services. That would be the press release coming from Eddie Munster, Speaker of the House's office, of course, or any Republican. I'm sick of it. I'm not kidding. I'm telling you, I'm sick of it. I consider this to be the personal responsibility of everybody who pays dues to the National Goddamned Rifle Association. I am sick of it. A 7-year-old who doesn't get to be an 8-year-old because some gang of ammosexual, evangelical, fundamentalist gun humpers are worried about when they're gonna come and try to take our guns away from us. You know, screw you right down to the ground, Wayne LaPierre. Screw you right down to the ground, Ted Nugent. Somebody dig up Charlton Heston and take a good long beer-sodden piss on him. Police Chief Mary Sklabasi said, "Of course, this is a tragic situation, and the thought that maybe if the right person had the right information at the right time could have prevented this, of course, it's very frustrating. Clearly, this was an individual who needed help. Clearly, this is an individual who should not have been able to purchase a handgun just this past September." But if we don't let Timothy Nelson Obishaw purchase a handgun, and the voices in his head purchase a handgun, then whatever shall we do when the government comes to put its jackbooted jackboots down on our necks, right next to our Confederate flag tattoo and the little line that says, "Only God can judge me"? But we knew it would happen again, didn't we? Sure we did. Oh, for God's sakes, don't go look up the story. You'll see the picture of the little girl. Don't look. I don't mean after she was shot. I mean before she was shot. You know, when she was a happy little soccer-playing 7-year-old girl. Yeah. Meanwhile, don't call the cops if you happen to be in Ohio. I mean, we've been down this road before, right? Don't call the cops if somebody's walking through your neighborhood with a semi-automatic military-style assault rifle. Don't do that. Because 911 will just tell you, well, that's his right as a American citizen under the holy, sacred, magical, sugar-coated, lollipop Second Amendment. Don't do it in Ohio either. This would be near Akron, Ohio. Daniel Kovacevic is 25 years old. He's been stopped by the police multiple times. He has a thing for carrying a military-style semi-automatic assault rifle around neighborhoods, for the most part, populated by melanin-enhanced human beings. He does it with his rifle slung across his back. That's what they report at Cleveland.com. Only yesterday, Daniel Kovacevic had some words with the owner of a barbershop who was also melanin-enhanced. Mm-hmm. And the police were called to break it up. Dion Slater, owner of the barbershop, didn't want the man hanging out in front of it with his freedom protector. Dion Slater said he was a threat to my community. If I can prevent him from shooting up the city, I would. I won't condone it. Somebody's got to stand up. I told him to take his gun off. I told him to let me have 5 or 10 minutes with him without his weapons. Meanwhile, the police did show up, and as Dion Slater reports it, they were more concerned about me than him, as if I were the threat. If it were me with a gun, they would have shut the whole block down. He's a threat to me and my people. He's a threat to me. Security at the University of Akron has called the police about Daniel Kovacevic. It's been all over social media in the Akron area. His picture was posted to Twitter when he was seen stalking around near one of the predominantly black high schools in Akron. But the police says, oh, there's nothing we can do. All we can do is ask the fella who's open carry and his freedom protector who he is and what he's doing and why he's there. But see, people open carrying their freedom protectors for freedom protecting purposes to keep the government, federal government, from coming and putting their jackbooted jackboots down on our good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered necks right next to our Confederate flag tattoo and our Bible verse that says only God can judge me. Well, we can't do nothing because, see, they're not required by law to even say so much as what their name is. You have to be careful. And this is a quote, okay? This isn't me being cute. This is a quote. You have to be careful because you get into search and seizure issues, said Rick Edwards, Akron police spokesperson. You can't detain them. Ohio isn't the only state to allow open carry. If you don't like it, you can talk to your legislators. That, you know, or your local undertaker. Mm-hmm. This won't end well. None of these things do. Let's see. One tweet said, Akron Police Department questioned white man after they received reports of gun sighting near Akron's only all-black high school. but it's his right. Entire neighborhoods in Akron, Ohio do not have the right to feel safe and secure in their homes because one of these rotten ass, gun-toting babies
might have their little feelings hurt, and then they would cry and murder somebody.
Screw them! You know, please, can't we have... Bob, it's up to you. You talk about something besides guns, Bob. Goddamn, come on. I mean, you used to have so much fun with the religious maniacs and stuff. What happened? Little blonde girls who don't get to be little blonde 8-year-olds happen. A guy who can't run a barber shop in a neighborhood in Akron without some white guy with a goddamn gun standing in front of it trying to intimidate people. That's what happened. Or then again, there's what happened in the home of Syed Farouk. You know, the American-born religious extremist who had all too easy access to firearms and managed to murder 14 people in San Bernardino a couple of days ago. That guy? Yeah, well, see, how does this happen? The way the story is laid out, several news organizations toured the apartments shared by the San Bernardino shooters, even though the residence may still be an active crime scene under investigation. The couple's landlord said reporters and photographers from BBC, CNN, MSNBC, and NBC rushed into the apartment Friday when he pried open the front door, and they live-tweeted and broadcast their findings on television. They picked stuff up. They took photographs of IDs. They rifled the infant child's room. Investigators said they did not authorize the tours, which could have contaminated the crime scene if it has not been cleared. God damn, we love our murder porn, don't we? I mean, we get off on it. It makes us hot. CNN, NBC, MSNBC, and BBC wouldn't goddamn do this if they didn't know that there were people sitting at home going, oh, show us the rest. Oh, get into her panty drawer, please. There's a picture of the Quran. Well, now we know. Oh, by the way, the San Bernardino shooting is now being handled on a federal level as a terrorism investigation. Mm-hmm. Because Muslim. And have you heard that, is the Planned Parenthood attack, is that being handled as a terrorism investigation? Have the feds announced that? Golly gee, Janet Lynch, I'm glad you're on the job, sister. Why? Why? I mean, where was the crime scene tape? Why did the landlord take a pry bar to the door of the apartment with all of those practitioners of the First Amendment standing behind him? And how did they get? I mean, police, mass murder, evidence. Crime scene? Something to learn, maybe, about how this kind of thing happens? No, screw that. What, San Bernardino's out of yellow crime scene, do not cross tape? What? Why were they allowed in? Have we? I don't recall any TV crews blowing through Dylan Roof's house after he slaughtered 9 people in a church. I don't remember that.
Jared Lee Loeffner. I don't remember anybody barreling through there to find out and take pictures of, and go through it. No. Did Robert Deere's trailer with no plumbing and no water? Mm-mm, sorry! What's different about this? Muslim!
Oh, well, I understand now. Reporters claim that federal investigators had already cleared out evidence related to the investigation but left behind the couple's personal items. Well, then, the First Amendment means that they get to rifle through that stuff, doesn't it? And on the one hand, Greg Sargent over at the Plumb Line says a spokesperson for the FBI in L.A. said, "Our search is over. We released the scene yesterday." Meanwhile, Joe Cerna at the L.A. Times says the San Bernardino sheriff's deputy said, "The feds told us it's still an active investigation. I don't know why there's people in there." This is sickening. Another individual by the name of Chris Grusin tweeted, "Anderson Cooper," that would be Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper, multimillionaire scion to the Vanderbilt fortune, "Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper almost desperate to get analysts to confirm that it's okay for them to be rifling through this apartment and get CNN off the hook." CNN journo on scene now says it's no longer just reporters. Well, there's a woman with a dog walking into the house. And, well, if CNN's doing it, then NBC has to do it. And if NBC has to do it, Fox has to do it. And if Fox has to do it, then MSNBC has to do it. And then, oh, by Jove, old fellow, do get out of the way. I'm the goddamn BBC, and we need to see this, too. We do find it so interesting, the way that you Americans with your gun fetish continue to slaughter each other. Wait, get the hell out of the way. Oh, my God. Could it be, is that her makeup mirror? Is that where she was looking on the day that she decided, my heavenly days. Never too early to drink. I don't think. And let's run over to Talabama, shall we? According to AL.com, and why not? A man is in jail now. Bobby Lynn Box. Bobby Lynn. He's in jail right now. Because yesterday, down in Jefferson County, Alabama, which of course is where Birmingham is located, but it's also where Hoover, Alabama, is located. Hoover has a fine high school football program. Turns out a lot of fine young SEC prospects. It does. But there's a doctor's office in Hoover there. And it was the Mars Hill Road doctor's office where Bobby Lynn Box, 44 years old from Helena, Alabama, walked in and said, "I'm going to kill all of y'all." That was on December the 2nd. He'd been a patient at the Mars Hill Road doctor's office. But the doctor said, "I ain't going to treat you no more because he's made threats. You know what? I will kill the entire staff here." And they told him not to come back. But Box called the office on Wednesday demanding that he be provided with his medical records and said, "Y'all better call me back and you better remember the promise I made you." Staff said, "Now we don't even have your records here in the office." So yesterday, Bobby Lynn Box walks into the doctor's office and again says, "I want my records." And he was standing there at the counter with his hands behind his back.
That's when the staff went and locked the entry door, moved to the rear of the building, and dialed 911. And the deputies and the Hoover police respond to the facility. And they found him still standing there at the front counter. And they arrested him. And he had warrants placed against him for two counts of making terroristic threats. And he's in the county lockup on $200,000 worth of bonds, don't you understand? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Meanwhile, in the way of denouement to the whole thing, Chief Deputy Randy Christian of the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department said he is extremely lucky he didn't get himself killed. No, he's not extremely lucky. He's extremely white. I hope he isn't in his right mind. If he's in his right mind, we will put him in the mix for the I'm Just an Idiot trophy. No, I don't think he's just an idiot. I think it's another day in Alabama. It's another day in Merca. I want my medical records. Wolverines! Yeah, don't you understand? Yeah, that's what I thought. Because, you know, that's the appropriate response now. It is. That's the appropriate response. You know what? I want my medical records, and if I don't get them lickety-split, I'm going to kill you. That's all. Mm-hmm. The stream sounds really bad. Stand by. Well, I'm sorry, Jay Cruz, and I wish I could tell you why it is the stream sounds really bad. But Smitty lets me know, coming in great in Florida. I'll tune in. Go figure. Go figure. Still sitting here answering emails from him. Where are you? Okay, Glenn says, I love the sound, Bob. It reminds me of the old days and listening to underground radio. It's not supposed to sound like that. Oh, by the way, we have an answer courtesy of Tim from L.A. Here's why the media went inside the Farouk home. Mm-hmm. Landlord lets reporters into San Bernardino suspect's home. Standing in a townhouse that had been the home of the husband and wife suspected in a shooting rampage that left 14 people dead and wounded, 21. A television reporter asked his producers to check a calendar to see if anything had been marked down on the December day when the massacre occurred. Local police and federal law enforcement officials had sealed the townhouse in the hours after the couple were killed in a shootout with police after the massacre. But then Doyle Miller went there to assess the damage after law enforcement officers had finished their search. And journalists at the scene asked to see inside, and Doyle Miller said, well, sure. That just opened the flood, Mr. Miller's wife Judy said in an interview at their home on Friday, adding they did not anticipate the chaotic scene it would soon become. It got way out of hand. Yes. Of course it did. I'll take that into account, Billable Rick. Billable Rick says, just be sure not to lose your swirly straw while you drink yourself into a stupor. Asa says, the stream sounds bad because it's only playing at 8K. Weird. All right, let me get a message out along those lines. Stand by, please.
Maybe something will come of it. I don't know. Although Billable Rick says, I can now hear you on my PC on a 16 kbps stream. You sound like you've escaped the well and are leaning against the wall at the top of the well. And probably hollering back down into it. Steve, meanwhile, says, it's bad because the stream is bad because Agent Fred is downloading porn. You know what? You know what's pathetic? That's as likely an answer as anything that has yet been propounded. Yes, absolutely. Thank you for the giggle. Oh, let's see. Don't just think that it's just about Talabama or anything. How's about an Arizona man? Oh, did we already talk about him? John Ritzheimer? This is the creep who has organized anti-Muslim rallies in the Phoenix area. He got off with a warning for videoing himself with a freedom protector and talking about how he wanted to provoke a confrontation in Islamburg. Yeah, we mentioned that the other night. We talked about that. The FBI issued an alert to be on the lookout for Ritzheimer. Just an alert. Just be on the lookout. Not an arrest warrant. Not a making terroristic threats charge or anything like that. Just, you know, be on the lookout. I mean, he might need some help. KNXV-TV quoted Ritzheimer saying, they asked me why I was coming to New York. I told them I was going to protest a Muslim group, but I was also helping my friend move to New Hampshire. And he meanwhile stopped using credit cards, turned off his cell phone to keep from being tracked by law enforcement. It was at that point that I hung up and went off the grid. Right. Ben Birch tells me he's also reset the transcoders. So if you restart your player, you should be getting better audio. Let me send Ben a thank you. You'll have this, I suppose. The Ritzheimer is a Marine Corps veteran. He is, of course, white. Apparently, Ritzheimer did get into New York because he got through New York and went to New Hampshire. They went so far as, before they left, Ritzheimer and his pal took video of themselves outside the Phoenix, Arizona FBI offices. No, really, this is not a joke. Let's see if we get any decent audio out of this. Yeah.
Hey guys, Blaine Cooper here with John Ritzheimer, who apparently the FBI has lost track of. Well, here we are in front of the FBI headquarters in Phoenix, Arizona. There you go, and there's the building. And they lost track of him, but here we are. They got track of us again, I guess. I don't know what's going on. The funny thing we should mention, if the FBI lost track of a well-known American citizen who's been in various media publications, how is it that they're going to keep track of Syrian refugees who want to blow up and kill innocent American people? This should be an alarm.
Right. Absolutely. The Syrian refugees who want to blow up America. Because that's what the Syrian refugees want to do. Can we mention that Mrs. Farouk entered the United States not from Syria, but from the land of our dear friends, our partners in peace, the good headloppers, the Saudis? Again with the Saudis. How many Saudis were there involved with 9/11? Yeah, I know.
a lot. What, 16 out of 19? Was that the number? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is what you can do. You can tweak the collective noses of the FBI as long as you're white and half mad out of your mind with gun paranoia and ammosexual gundamentalism, you know, gun humping.
To any American citizen, the FBI just somehow may not be able to keep track of the bad guys when they're more worried about a good guy. Anyway, so you guys, this is Blaine Cooper. Share this video and make sure the FBI knows that all is well and we are have been in front of their headquarters and that John is here and that there is no threat and they can rest and relax. And
yeah, okay. I don't know. What can you say about a guy like that?
You dick!
Yeah, I know. It goes on and on and on. Oh, here's a fun one. We're just crisscrossing the country. Back to Alabama. You read a story like this, and you think maybe you're already drinking, and somebody put something in your sweet tea. Mm-hmm. Britton Clayton Traylor put on a lifelike latex mask and got his Freedom Protecting handgun and walked into the Carmike Lee Branch Theaters again in Hoover, Alabama, about 11:50 a.m. this past Monday, and robbed the place. He ordered the manager to open the safe. He took out all the cash. He stuffed the cash into a backpack and then went a-running out the front door. He wasn't counting on the theater manager following him out, but he did, and he tackled Britton Clayton Traylor. Mm-hmm. And he and a passerby held him down until police showed up. It gets weirder. When police showed up, they inspected Britton Clayton Traylor's vehicle. Wait for it. A 911 Porsche Carrera, actually a Porsche Carrera 911, or a Porsche 911 Carrera. Anyway, who cares? It only matters to Porsche people. But he had stashed a wig and some other stuff that he was going to use as a disguise for his getaway. It gets funner. Britton Clayton Traylor has been charged with first-degree robbery. He remains in jail on $60,000 bond. He has previous arrests in Leeds, Alabama for multiple theft charges. Most of those, however, eventually got dismissed, and there's no real explanation for why. Because white guy. Britton Clayton Traylor is an author, yes. And he is obsessed with the New World Order, right? And he explained to officers that his very, very meticulously planned crime was going to help him achieve higher status among the Freemasons. Yeah, I know. Oh, thank you, Carol. Thank you. Thank you. Carol says, I reset the stream like night and day, crystal clear. What a load off my mind. I appreciate that. I really, really do. Meanwhile, Captain Greg Rector, damn near killed her, of the Hoover police said, we're not really buying that, as we've never heard of Masons instructing members to commit criminal acts. It's really one of the most ridiculous excuses we've heard lately. He may have achieved a higher level of stupidity, but that's about it. Have you met Bobby Lynn Box, Britton Clayton Traylor? Have you? Because it sounds like y'all going to have a lovely time. In the institutional world of the Alabama Department of Corrections, one hopes, if your case is not once again mysteriously dismissed. No. Here's an example of Britton Clayton Traylor's writing.
There are those amongst us who are actually serving a much darker power while purporting to be messengers of light and hope. You will learn of some of the movements that have been shaping world politics and economics and shifts in world religious thought, the influence of powerful occultists and dynasties of families can be traced back to very frightening origins.
I wonder how many paragraphs you have to go in that before you get mention of the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, huh?
Ron in the only recently frozen north says, bullshit. He apparently knows SFA about the Masons.
I know me some Masons, and they ain't a theater burglar nowhere amongst them.
But just the same.
But you remember how Mr. Ritzheim is all worried about how the FBI can't keep us safe from all them Syrian refugees what wants to kill everybody here?
I know, wrong accent, right?
Too much corn pone, Bob, too much corn pone.
Well, he's not the only one worrying about the refugees. We really didn't get a chance to have prayer meeting Wednesday this week because it was preempted by another American-born religious maniac taking a firearm to a public space and killing a bunch of people.
But lots of people are still worrying. Two people worrying about those Syrians, them refugees, are gospel sharp Andrew Womack, who invited cranky old James Dobson, who once invited instructed fathers to help keep their little boys from catching the gay by taking them into the shower with them and shaking their John Thomases at them. That's a euphemism for penis, by the way, in case anybody was wondering. Penis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, penis.
Well, to talk about those refugees and of course, as ever, to talk about those homosexuals, right? Those homosexuals.
And on the third day, God created the Remington bolt-action rifle so that man could fight the dinosaurs and the homosexuals.
Amen.
I just love the way that little kid says homosexuals. But here's the audio.
Well, let me ask you a couple of things. Again, I believe we're on the same page, but I want you to respond to these questions. Some people are saying, well, if you are going to oppose homosexuality on what the Bible says, it also says that you're supposed to stone them to death. Do you believe in stoning them to death? Do you want to kill all homosexuals?
And if you don't, why don't? Why don't you, you heretic?
Mm-hmm. I bet you don't want to kill them. I bet you're one of them homosexuals yourself, ain't you?
I don't, and that's a tough question because that comes out of the Mosaic law. But I don't believe you have to take the entire Bible. And as far as I know, there's no place else in the Bible that tells us to kill those who are don't believe what we believe.
Oh, you lying son of a bitch. Self-made.
Really?
He's apparently never read the book that he preaches about. Old Testament's full of people getting killed for not believing the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And Saul of Tarsus, back when he was, a member of the Temple Enforcement Squad or whatever, he tells us that he was involved with the stoning to death of St. Stephen for not believing the right way.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Eating shrimp, stoning. Polyester Dacron cotton blend, stoning. Disobeying your parents, stoning. Yeah. Barbecued pulled pork pig sandwich with hot mustard slaw, stoning.
Mm-hmm.
Having a glass of milk with a steak, stoning.
There's more stuff that gets you stoned than... Then don't.
But anyway, never mind. We know James Dobson's a freak. Let's let him fly his freak flag.
Well, could I answer that one?
Okay. You ask a tough question.
I know I did, but
no, it's not a tough question at all. Not a tough question in the tiniest little bit least. Not tough, no.
You dick!
No, it's not tough. How about, no, well, let's not stone anybody. Let's not murder anybody. Let's not kill anybody. Because sooner or later, if you start making a list of people who deserve to die, somebody's going to put your ass on it, Robespierre. That's kind of how it works. Right, right. But do continue, you evangelical fundamentalist freaks, you Christians.
I know that these are things that people are using. They use them against me.
Yeah.
But you know, the Old Testament did say to kill a homosexual, to kill an adulteress, to kill a witch. You had to kill them. And if your children were rebellious and didn't respond the first time you corrected them, you had to bring them to the elders and let them kill them.
Do you notice there? Do you notice there that he says the Old Testament says to kill an adulteress? He's still using gender-specific adjectives there. Or, well, I guess that's a noun, isn't it? Because it does. I guess the Old Testament doesn't say to kill an adulterer. Maybe it's a lot like Wahhabist Islam in that regard. Because, again, our good friends and partners in peace, the good headloppers, the Saudis, have ordered a man to undergo a number of lashes upon his bare-necked back. But the woman with whom he was being an adulterer, the adulteress, she gonna get her head lopped off. And trust me, that beats the living hell out of some backlashing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. The adulteress gets killed because God is love, y'all.
And the way that I respond to that is that in the Old Covenant, people couldn't be born again. They couldn't have their nature changed the way that we can. And so in a sense, it's like a disease, like cancer today. We say that we don't have a cure for it. And so people will cut off parts of your body. You will take radiation. You will do extreme things that actually hurt you. But it's in order to save the life. You'll sacrifice a part. Yeah. And in the Old Testament, when people did these things, it says rebellion is as witchcraft and stubbornness as iniquity and idolatry, 1 Samuel 15. And I believe that those things were given over to demonic forces, and you couldn't be delivered of that in the Old Covenant.
Hmm.
But in the New Covenant, we've got a cure, which is forgiveness and salvation through Jesus.
You know, just like Robert Deere got. Yep. Just killed a bunch of people at a Planned Parenthood clinic. Will you forgive me, Jesus?
Of course I will. That's why I had myself crucified. Robert Deere, come on up.
Yeah. Welcome. Abide by me, thou good and faithful servant. You know it. Oh, by the way, if you see Ted Nugent around anywhere, duck. Ted Nugent has called for the, and this here is a quote, cleansing of liberals from America, from Merca. Mm-hmm. The cleansing of liberals from Merca. He's put a price on your head. But don't worry, he's just exercising his First Amendment rights to talk about how much he loves his Second Amendment rights. And wouldn't America be so much better if all the people who are tired of all the goddamn gun humpers were just gone?
So we don't now kill our children when they're rebellious. We don't kill adulterers. We don't kill homosexuals. But it hasn't changed the fact that those are still wrong. We just now.
Yeah, what do you mean, we, amigo? Because there's plenty of people who follow your sick, twisted God and your sick, twisted interpretation of your God, who do kill homosexuals and who do kill transsexuals and who do kill lesbians, gays, bisexuals, transgender, transsexuals, cross-dressers. Yeah. Because God is love, y'all. Marty says, no, Porsche 911 Turbo Carrera is the proper designation. Hey, it ain't necessarily, Marty. It is possible to have a 911 Carrera that ain't turbo. I would know these things. Mm-hmm. Billable Rick asks the question, wasn't there a Saudi king named Farouk in the 1970s? No, I don't think so. But, I mean, there was a King Farouk, but I don't think he was Saudi, was he? Wasn't he one of the Hashemite kings? Maybe he was the king of Iraq back around 1948, deposed or something like that? Yeah. Yeah. Well, this just beats all. We're still having stream problems. And you can interpret it that way, Asa. Asa asks, is this Cornflakes Pisser Inner suggesting we should lop the genitals off the homosexuals in order to save their lives? He would probably volunteer to do it himself. King Farouk, the angry Indian tells me, Egypt, Brother Bob, Egypt. He died of gluttony. Still loud and clear in the only recently frozen north. That's good to know. Thank you. So here we are, 15 minutes past the hour. We are still $340 away from our fundraising goal for the evening, and that means we are still at zero. Hopefully that will change. Let's take a break. It's 15 past the hour, and that'll give Sparky a chance to fire up the Horn Malloy Skype chat group and see who all wants to come and play. We've had some rousing Jim Dandy Fridays on the front porch of late. I wonder if maybe we'll have another one. One never knows. Yep, there he is. Billable Rick got it. King Farouk of Egypt. Yeah. Friday. Yeah, why the hell not? This'll work. This is Conversation Radio, listener-supported, with a ton of bills to pay. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back. I don't care if I know it's not Jesus just left Chicago or waiting for the bus, but it's not, yeah, The Cure. Friday, I'm in love. Why not? Because why not? It is. I was just chatting with the angry Indian. He said, when are you going to host a music show? I said, when I can afford the rights. He said, it would be fun. I like your choices. I said, honestly, who doesn't love The Cure? Angry said, LOL, a lot of people, actually. I'll take that as a compliment, Carol Baker. Damn, you're back. As opposed to, damn, you're back. It's Friday on the front porch. And that means it's time for the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, if I can punch the right button. Good evening, Sparky. Sparky.
Wait a minute. Time out. It's not your fault. It's my fault. Friday, I'm on drugs. Hold on. Darn it.
Oh, Sparky. Hello. Let's try this again.
The crimes.
There we go. Are you there, Sparky?
Yeah, you know, now I have to turn down the radio.
Okay.
Because I had to figure out what the hell you were doing.
You did drinking.
Okay.
No, I wish. No, just having one technical misery after another. I unplugged the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. That's what I did.
Oh, you weren't answering.
Well, I was. You just didn't know.
Well, it showed the call drop.
Yeah. I was over here all ground control to Major Spark. No, wasn't happening.
I've been turning back and forth between this radio all night trying to get the damn thing to work. Wouldn't work on the 48 stream, and everybody told me to go to the 16. So, but I can't get that on the radio. So finally, the radio worked.
Maybe now we're okay.
Yeah, I hope the radio's working. I just had to turn it off when you called me so I could hear what you were doing.
You sound clear on my end, Bob.
Thank you, Rick, and. Ben reset the transcoders, whatever that means. Maybe reset the controls for the heart of the sun too. But it's looked like from this end, it's looked like it was working all night.
Well,
and that's the difference between internet radio and terrestrial radio, because in terrestrial radio you can have something called a confirmation speaker, and you just kind of make sure you're not feeding back, and you turn down the mic, and you turn it up, and you go, hey, look, there's my air, and then you turn it back down, and you're golden. Need to figure out how to do that with internet radio.
You'd think they could invent that, Bob.
You would think. You would.
Maybe it's Agent Fred.
Hey, as soon as you mentioned Agent Fred downloading porn, the stream cut out.
Yeah. Like, oops.
Yeah. He didn't like that, apparently.
Well, the agent, look, Agent Fred has probably had a long week.
There you go. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Very long. Very long. So, isn't it amazing how the right wing is so quick to characterize what happened as, you know, Islamic terrorism, which, you know, I guess to the extent the guy was Islamic and he's a terrorist, okay, he's an Islamic terrorist, that's true. But yeah, then they haven't said that the guy in Colorado Springs was a Christian terrorist.
Yeah, but damn it, Rick, that's the whole thing. How is it that you've got two American-born mass murderers and they aren't just American-born mass murderers? I guess because because we're so goddamned American exceptional that just being American-born can't be enough to make you a mass murderer.
Well, yeah, you know, I suppose you're right. I mean, interestingly, you know, one of the retrograde tabloids in New York, the New York Daily News, actually had a headline. They got it right in big letters. It said terrorist, and then it basically called all the other shooters who were white guys terrorists and even referred to Wayne LaPierre as a terrorist. And, you know, so it's
That was the New York Daily News. And frankly, they're engaged in a campaign against Wayne LaPierre, which, frankly, is decades overdue. I mean, a campaign against the NRA itself is decades overdue. But I want to know how it is that the federal government can say, oh, God, we're looking at it now as a terrorism case. I mean, Muslim. I mean, that woman, she went on the Facebook and done pledged allegiance to the ISIS.
Well, yeah.
Well, God Almighty! I mean, fans of crummy Saturday morning television had best not be heard playing any repeats of that live action TV program where the woman turns into a superhero by saying, shit, I hope I don't get a visit from the hero. No, there was a program. Oh. I just hope by saying this I don't get a visit from any of Agent Fred's buddies or any of those humorless bastards in black suits and skinny ties who talk to their wrists. But when she wanted to turn into a superhero, she said, Almighty ISIS. There was like, poof, smoke, and she turned around in a circle or something, and then she went and kicked ass in a Saturday morning live action kind of way, mind you. But let's not have any of that now. I mean, well, I'm sorry. I guess I'm kind of undone here. But and you know how I feel about the weekends. You know, the Sunday pulled through. But honest to God, I think I need this one.
It's not going to cure, Bob, with that swirly straw working.
Well, that's true. It's nothing that some tequila's not going to cure.
I thought you were empty. We should send you some more tequilas.
Did I say anything? I haven't taken any pledges, ISIS or otherwise. They once asked Richard Burton if he had ever stopped drinking, and he said, I did one day. He said, I did try to stop drinking one time, and it was the most miserable afternoon of my entire life.
He got the DTs awfully quick, I guess.
I wonder if he was serious.
He pretty much, Larry, pretty much. One of the hardest drinking actors of Hollywood has ever known.
Yeah, he probably made Errol Flynn look like a piker, I imagine, with his drinking.
And he just pounded the stuff away.
Yeah.
And died pretty young as a result, too, so there's that. But no. Hey, I do have one happy. I ran into this earlier today. I am ever so proud. And Carol has probably already seen and heard about this. There is a Democratic member of the Missouri State Legislature, the Missouri House of Representatives. Her name is Stacey Newman. And she has pre-filed what will be known in the upcoming Missouri legislative session as House Bill 1397. And I just love this. because it has to do with a constitutional right. It requires that prospective gun buyers watch a 30-minute video that is all about fatal gun injuries, and they have to be accompanied by a licensed gun dealer while they watch it. And then the gun dealer also would have to be located at least 120 miles from the potential gun buyer's home. After that, the potential gun buyer would have to meet with a physician, and the physician would evaluate them to see, quote, if such firearm purchase would increase such purchaser's risk of experiencing an adverse physical, emotional, or other health reaction. And that would have to happen 72 hours before the potential gun humper would be allowed to purchase the gun that he wants to hump. Guess where all of that language comes from?
The Texas anti-abortion bill.
No, that's what is required of a woman in Missouri if she wants to get a, if she wants to exercise her constitutional right to get an abortion.
Yeah,
that's precious, man.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I loved it, Jack.
Yeah,
equal protection.
Yeah, Carol tells me I fucking loved it.
The only thing that's missing, Bob, is they need to have some provision in there requiring the gun owner to meet with an insurance agent at least 120 miles away from their residence to discuss purchasing insurance for their gun.
Yeah, I would support that too. Although I've floated my my gun insurance theory to a few right wing gun humpers, and they don't like it at all.
No,
no, because it ain't free. It's, you know, freedom ain't free, though, I thought.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, and did you also hear about how the, I guess it's the Democratic Party, they want to start banning people on the no-fly list from purchasing firearms because they could be potential terrorists, and a lot of the Republicans are saying no, because there are some people who shouldn't be on, you know, on the list in the first place. But correct me if I'm wrong, the no-fly list started when Bush was in office. And they didn't make squat. They didn't say anything about it before, so they may be terrorists.
Oh, you mean hypocrites?
Yeah.
You may be.
Well, about that, I know we're talking about guns here, but about the no-fly list, because I have such an aversion to dealing with, and everybody here knows this except for maybe Bob, you know, I have such an aversion to dealing with the airport security and going through all that stuff, and I would get anxious and stuff about it, that they probably put me on the no-fly list because I would resist going through the process because I don't like it so much. But that doesn't necessarily make me a you know, I mean, there are legitimate reasons to be upset about having to go through TSA all the time.
No, but this is what the Republicans started to keep, quote, terrorists, close quote, off the list. So then when the Democratic Party said, hey, let's use that list to ban people from buying, purchasing firearms, they're having second thoughts.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe I'm missing something here. I don't know.
I think it's a good idea. Maybe they'll get rid of the list, or they say revamp the list.
Well, no, I mean, they really do try to maintain a list of known dangers, and they try to keep them from flying. But the thing is, some of them are in the United States and some are outside. But the ones that are in the United States can still go and buy firearms to their heart's content.
Yep.
I mean, this isn't about whether TSA is a pain in the ass, Larry. It is. This is about what's that phrase I'm looking for? Equal protection of the law. Yeah. Oh, well, let's look around the room. Let's see. Oh, hey, Ron.
I'm Bob.
How in the world are you?
just sitting up here in Canada minding my own business.
And I understand you've been told to do precisely that, correct?
Yeah. It was entertaining.
Yeah, you want to expand on that, please?
Oh, he just, it was a ex-military forum, and I posted the same comment on that forum that I posted on my Facebook page last night. And basically it said that both Deering and the Muslim couple were psychopaths, shouldn't have guns. Guns were entirely too easy. Pointed out that more people had died from guns in the last 40 years than we have lost in all the combined wars that America has fought since its founding, et cetera, et cetera. And I was told to basically keep my
SDFU
out of there. Yeah. And so I mentioned the fact that I was born in West Virginia, paid taxes, voted, had kids who were dual citizens, a daughter living in the same state where yet Wednesday's crap happened. And I would say whatever the hell I wanted to because I paid taxes. And he could disagree with my opinions, but he had no fucking right whatsoever to tell me what I could say. And you want to quote me the Second Amendment? I'll start quoting you the First. So back the fuck off. I put some of that in all caps, did my master chief parade ground voice, and I haven't heard anything more from him. The white dude in North Carolina. Oh, I did mention the fact that why is it the only people I see promoting gun rights are white dudes? I don't see any blacks doing it. I don't see any Hispanics doing it. I don't see any Muslims doing it. It's only white dudes. Most of them live in the South and drive pickup trucks. What is your problem? And like I say, he disappeared. But it made me feel better. It was kind of cathartic.
Yeah, downright healthy.
Yeah. I've had some interesting responses from folks in West Virginia that I've known for years. And a phenomenal number of people who normally comment on every post I put up and, you know, likes and all that stuff. And it's crickets. So I find that interesting.
Well,
I got
no patience left, Ron. If you want to argue about your Second Amendment rights, then at some point in time, I have to ask. And of course, the Scalia wing of the Republican Party says that no, there ain't no right not to get killed for no reason at all. Well, hell no, that ain't in the Constitution. But it, for these big babies, well, you know, sometimes just having a gun will be enough to, you know, to keep it. And maybe there's a little bit of proof to that, a little bit of truth to it. I mean, we got a lot of burglaries in West Virginia, but the vast majority of them don't happen when homes are occupied because this is one gunned up state.
And most people know how to shoot.
Yeah, and if you come in on two legs, you're liable to be carried out by four. but
interesting little story. When I came to Canada in 1974, I knew it was a very foreign country, and they had a lot of strange views about things, guns, etc. And I asked an RCMP guy at the border, and we were doing all the paperwork. I said, in the event I did happen to have a gun, what are the rules for protecting my home and property? And he looks at me and he said, well, if somebody's breaking into your house and you feel threatened and you're shooting, if he falls outside of the window, reach out and pull him inside. And that's all he said. And then I realized later on, he was having fun with me because even in that circumstance, I would have been in a world of shit unless I could definitely prove without any doubt whatsoever that my life was in imminent danger. So you know, it's a whole different mindset. And it goes throughout most of the society up here. And it seems completely foreign to the American psyche now, which is troubling.
And
by the way, I'm not holding up Canada as a particular paragon. We've got our own wingnuts up here. We just got rid of Stephen Harper, who was a wingnut of the First Order. And so there are people that have the same views about things that are down in the U.S. It's just that they seem to be more genteel and vocal and cautious about airing it out in the light of day.
Or, well, I don't know. Unless I'm missing something, it seems like, you know, pissed off Canadian is also almost oxymoronic. Maybe somebody besides Rob Ford goes around screaming in Canada, but you don't see a lot about him.
No, you don't.
It's like what we were talking about the other night. You know, your attitude to Syrian refugees is to say, well, this may be a challenge to our abilities, but by golly, we're Canada, and we stand on guard for thee, and I think we can do this, eh?
Yeah.
We'll just all pull together as Canadians. Right? I mean, isn't that a cute little accent notwithstanding. Isn't that about it?
That's about it.
Whereas the American, and you know, this all goes back to about 1980, and the accession of Ronnie Reagan and the imposition of just pants sopping fear we can't do that. They might hurt us, them poor people what's just trying not to get killed no more. And Ferg and I were having a conversation earlier today, and of course many of the members of some of the members of the Horn Family Commune congregation have met Ferg. You have, Ron. And he's
fine, upstanding young man.
And he said, I wish, and for a minute there, I was kind of shocked, but he got to the right place. He said, I don't want Syrian refugees to come to the United States, because I don't want them to have people. I don't want them to have Americans treating them as crappily. And that was not the word he used. As Americans will, because we are a mean, hateful, racist, bigoted country. I said, son, I'm sorry that, you know, maybe hearing me talk so much has given you that outlook. And he said, that didn't give me that outlook. He said, the people I've grown up with gave me that outlook.
It's been documented already with people who were already here.
Well, one of the fundamental differences, and I guess the first official roots of it, was a government policy put in place back in the late 70s, early 80s by our current Prime Minister, Daddy, Pierre Trudeau. But there was a federal program created to encourage what is called multiculturalism. And the complete opposite of that is the long-held American view of the U.S. as a melting pot. And this has been in place for at least 35 years, if not 40, and it seems to be widely accepted as one of the things that define us as a country. And has a lot to do with the attitudes that anybody under 50 now has in terms of accepting refugees. And I grew up with the idea of a melting pot, not realizing that basically what it meant was we want everybody to come here and be just like us. Don't make us change to accept them. They have to accept us and become us. And it's a fundamental difference in point of view. And if it's been around and kids are exposed to it from the time they're babies, It's not hard to understand why it's so difficult to displace. Personally, I find it refreshing. I don't think it could happen in the U.S.
Yeah, Ron, what the melting pot means is that everyone...
Hey, Larry, your volumes are really... Your levels are really low.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
You almost sound Canadian, Larry.
Well, sometimes I wish that I were. I'm not going to... My iPad's about ready to die, so I'll come back on this a little bit later then. But the assimilation thesis says that everyone is supposed to come here and supposed to adopt the white American or white Anglo-Saxon Protestant American ideology and belief system, and we're supposed to accept the structures of this culture, and everyone is supposed to downplay and try to rid themselves of their own culture. I'm being simplistic right now, but that's what basically that.
No, I think you nailed it.
And I've always liked.
His iPad just went.
Oh, okay.
Well, I've always maintained that once we're all the same shade of brown, then we won't have all this racist bullshit that we're going through. But we all got to get to the same shade of brown, and that's going to take a few more generations.
Yeah, and along the way, the other fear, Roger, is that you know there are plenty of other things to divide us. You can find plenty of examples in the wider world of corrupt people who ain't white, who are more than happy to oppress and even murder their own fellow citizens.
Yeah, we've got the Sunni Shia number and the various tribes in Africa and I agree, Bob. That's sort of a tongue in cheek number that. But as long as we have this white shades all the way to the first generation blacks out of Africa, as long as there is that instant distinction, and you know, you include the Japanese, the Chinese, the Koreans, the Laotians, Vietnamese, all the rest of it. But as people become in the Native American population, they sort of have become all the same shades of brown. And to the best of my knowledge, from the folks I know who are the indigenous people, there's not a whole lot of, well, I'm a quarter and you're an eighth and they're a half, and therefore we have to fight with each other. They go, hey, we're there. You know, we're all part of the same group because we are all sort of the same shade of brown.
Well, yeah.
No.
There's angry.
Yeah, I figured I'd get him worked up with that statement.
No. That is not true at all. The racial or the racism spectrum, the racialism within the native world within the United States, is much more vicious than people realize. Because you're not just talking about how people look. You're also talking about inheritances. You're also talking about who has availability to work, who has availability to pro capita checks. Who has availability to housing, who has availability to heat and running water in that housing. You know, it's a lot more involved than we all just got here. That's not true at all. There's so much racism and many powwows, I stopped going. And I suppose a lot of you are not aware that the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma voted their black members out twice. Twice. You had the Pequot Nation that has split into the black and the white Pequot Nation. You had the Seminoles that have legally removed their African members. So to say that racism doesn't exist in the fourth world in the United States is extremely inaccurate.
Especially when there's a casino money involved.
Well, that just makes it worse.
But there's a larger truth here too, and I am I'm going to be admittedly simplistic about this. There is a difference between celebrating diversity, and because we haven't had any food porn on the program yet, I'll use food porn. The Italian family that cherishes its Sunday gravy, okay, or the Vietnamese community in the Houston area that has taken the Cajun approach to crawfish and turned it into an entirely different thing that the entire freaking coast is losing their minds over now, are examples of that. It's, yes, we're different, and here's how we're going to do something good with how we're different. And then there's the cultural diversity that says, here we are, we're set apart. Please notice that we are apart from you. And that's and it's in that latter area where you have where you have, you know, friction created. I mean, you want my, well, maybe you don't, but here's my take on refugees. Wherever they come from, the first generation will probably struggle to a certain extent with English. That's generally the case. The second generation will grow up bilingual, English and whatever the mother tongue was. And the third generation will speak English better than people who have been here for 9 generations. And that is, I mean, that's pretty often the model. And it's assimilation in a good way. And I don't say this because of Islam. I say this because I despise all organized religions. If people come here from Syria and mom and dad feel the need to wear the special headgear because Allah will not love them if they don't wear the special headgear, that's fine. Leave them alone. Welcome to Merca. Hopefully your children will look at that and say, God damn, this is stupid. And then the third generation will just be atheists or free thinkers and will walk away from all of that foolishness. And that's not just Islam. That's any other organized religion system. Or maybe, you know, they'll be Islamic or Muslim at home and in their place of worship, but in the wider world, come to an understanding that this is a secular state. And that we work best when we're not deliberately setting ourselves off, but when we are trying to integrate. I mean, and here's another silly, meaningless example. And I've mentioned it before. There's a sushi bar in Beckley, West Virginia now, and it's a good one. And this is the part where Tim says, Timmy. Oh, maybe
he's still off somewhere.
Yeah, that's the part where Tim, deeply immersed in his Japanese culture, says sushi, yuck, because Tim hates sushi.
Yeah, but Bob, you know, let's go back a little bit historically. I mean, let's look at Europe, since, you know, nothing else exists in the world, right? That's the one thing that most people can have some kind of an understanding about. And, you know, there's a whole lot of talk about the Knights Templar and what have you. Look at all of those Crusader castles that are dotting Europe, leading to Western Asia. At, you know, at various points, the soldiers, they had reinforcements, they had connections to the home empire, the home country, whatever the hell. Eventually, the reinforcements stop coming. They come down from the castles. They become the lords and lairds, whatever the hell, of these areas. They integrate. They become part of the system. That is not what's happening today. And it hasn't happened for a hell of a long time. You know, the United States, you know, people really like to still preserve the idea that this was an accident of history, that it was unplanned.
That white people just sort of stumbled onto the North American continent.
You know, it was just accidental, so this way no one can be blamed. And then started trying to flood as many other Europeans that were fighting amongst each other in Europe. Because it's funny, all of my European friends say, you know, white only means something over here and in England. You do realize that. Because when they go back to Croatia, the ethnic lines are drawn. When I'm in rooms with Turks and Russians all at the same time, they talk about how different each other is.
They all look white to me, right? If I wanted to be stupid about it and be broad about it. But the point is, whiteness, the concept of whiteness, is new. It is historically new. And it was never meant to integrate anybody. It was meant to conquer. You know, there's so many complaints about where they're putting up a mosque over here. I have to hear the muezzin now in my neighborhood. I never had to deal with this before. And I said, that's funny, because when I was in school and when you were in school, nobody had a problem with a cathedral being built in Oman, even though the people said that they didn't want them in Algeria. There are Catholic cathedrals all over Vietnam. The French went to war to protect that. The idea that they have a right to come in, that this is our property, we are not leaving. And the white man in the United States believed them too. Johnson and Eisenhower and Kennedy said, you're right, you shouldn't have to leave. We'll pay for it. We'll actually send you troops. Oops, now we're stuck in a quagmire. We can't really leave because we don't want to give it up either. So we're going to bring in Cambodia. We're going to bring all, you know, Laos. We're going to bring all of this in.
But that homeland label seems to fit in with what you're saying.
Well, it's a concept.
Yeah.
You know, which is related more to European fascism, right? Not just Germany, but Spain, Portugal, Italy, Greece, right? Britain came close. They came very close. They didn't even want to fight, you know, the Nazis, right? They did everything possible to prevent that from happening. So, you know, we have to really ask ourselves what is really going on and looking at things in a historical sense. This was never meant to be a melting pot. It just got to the point where there's so many goddamn people here, we can't make them leave. What are we going to do? So in the late 50s, they started to come up with the concept of the melting pot, and nobody really started pushing that until the 1970s. Italians couldn't get a job in Philadelphia in the 1970s. They assumed that every Italian worked for the mafia. You could work on the docks, you could do construction, you could pick up rubbish, but you couldn't work in an office. Same thing with Jews. Same thing with Poles. I still hear Polish jokes when I go back home. It's 2015. I still hear Polish jokes from people who are not even old enough to remember these goddamn ugly things. They're just regurgitating this culture. And it's cool now to be a racist son of a bitch. And it's not just for white people, it's just white people have the power here. But hate, and we also have to make a distinction between, you know, racial prejudice and racism. They're not the same thing. And the biggest problem with this in terms of linguistics is the fact that we keep associating racism with an attitude instead of pointing out that we just had a black man shot to death, execution style, by a firing squad in San Francisco. And, you know, we're talking about he has a criminal record. We had a Planned Parenthood shot up here. That's not considered terrorism. And as soon as they found out that this couple in California were Muslim, boom. Even though it turns out we really aren't really sure exactly what the hell was going on. The reportage has been terrible. First they said it was 12 people dead. Then it was 3 people. Then it turned into 14. Then they used the president of Turkey's name, supposedly saying that this was one of the assailants. They were wrong about that, right? I mean, there are Twitter screenshots all over the place of this. Then they framed or tried to finger this man's brother, who turns out to be a decorated Navy vet and war veteran. Combat veteran, sorry. So, you know, what the hell is really going on here? We are in such a spin and a funk of nonsense that is not funny. And Trump is taking advantage of this. The entire GOP is taking advantage of the chaos that they started and that they're blaming us for. And when I say us, I mean everybody who is not them. And while we're sitting here talking about what to do with these refugees, the point is, why do we even have a Syrian refugee problem to begin with?
Well, my question is, what are we as a society going to do to root out this, because the whole economic and political and social structure has been based upon this colonialist and imperialist attitude, and the economic system buttresses and supports these attitudes, and we're all being, you know, forced or being brainwashed into having to hear about this stuff on a regular basis. And for me personally, right now at this time, I'm not saying, you know, that I would feel this way. You know, maybe I'll feel better, but this whole thing is really depressing, and I feel really helpless to be able to deal with it. I don't want to live in this society anymore.
Well, don't feel helpless, bro. It's not over. It's not over yet. All right, things are bad, but, you know, we don't – this isn't Chile. We don't have troops in the street, you know, at this point anyway, you know, grabbing people and putting them into the middle of a sports arena and just, you know, asking their name and then shooting them. It's getting to that point. It's getting to that point, but it's not that goddamn – but, I mean, the fact is we still have a democratic government. But, see, the thing is people pick and choose when the hell they're going to get upset and what they're going to do. I'm still waiting for the million white people to march against police brutality in the United States.
Yeah, you're going to wait a long time.
Yeah, so if that's not going to happen, when you see everything that's going on and they're killing a nigga a week, all right? So, you know, if this is happening and you can have a draft dodger like Donald Trump and another draft dodger like Ted Nugent, who are, you know, citing other draft dodgers, right? Like fucking Dick Cheney and W. Bush. And I've never served. But like I've told Bob before on this show, I still have my Selective Service card in my goddamn wallet. When I turned 18, my mother said, go to the post office and sign the fuck up. That's what you're supposed to do. And I went. And she knew full well I was anti-war. But I figured funny, I would make my goddamn argument if I got drafted.
Yeah, funny. I got the same speech.
Yeah, but we went, though, Bob.
Yeah, yeah.
These motherfuckers went to their lawyers. We went. And if they fucking called me, I would have goddamn gone. I would have done something, and I would have made a fucking argument. Hey, man, I don't want to be bothered with this shit. You're shooting my people here. What the fuck you want me to go over there for? You know, I mean, I would have made an argument, but I would have fucking showed up.
You talking about the Muhammad Ali speech?
The Muhammad Ali speech, the speech my cousin gave when they called him. You know, I mean, I'm going to be real about it. You want me to go out there and chop people up for you, and then I got to worry about the fuck's going to happen to me when I try to get a sandwich here. Because that's what happened to my father in uniform. And other men in my family who served and came back to the South and were like, nigga, we'll feed you, but you got to sit outside.
Go round back.
Go round back. So if we got a history like that, and that's what? 50 years ago, 60 years ago. So, you know, and then we're asking ourselves now why there's so much violence, why we have a white guy, John Wertheimer, who is on video in a vehicle with another man brandishing a gun, saying that he's going to go to a Islamic newspaper's office in New York City to challenge them directly for calling him a terrorist. The FBI is out putting an alert saying we lost track of this motherfucker. It turns out that the highway patrol or whatever fucking finally caught up with him. They gave him a warning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, as I noted, he was going to Islamburg, New York. And I go back, what, 2 months, 3 months to a story that I became aware of from our good friend Dr. John about the right-wing Republican minister. He's a minister of the gospel, congressional candidate. Who lost out to the adulterous abortion provider or purchaser. But the feds popped him for saying that he was going to be the standoff gunner in an attack again on the same place in New York. And the judge held up the plea agreement saying he wasn't sure if what the guy had said constituted a credible threat within the meaning of the federal law.
The fuck was that? Yeah, you have to laugh about
and it gets funnier because the federal judge who did that was an African American appointee to the federal bench.
Hey man, you see the human lawn jockeys that are all over the place. Dr. Ben Carson, he's wavering between number one and number three, depending on whether or not Marco Rubio's mistress story is true. Turns out he's been screwing around on his wife, and that's probably where that money's been going that's been disappearing from his coffers. Yeah. You know, I mean, look, there were Jews who served with the SS. I mean, there was only a handful. I think it was like 13 men. About 80 men or so who were British served with the SS. You know, you're going to have that. you're going to have freaks and morons. You know,
but I
mean,
I wanna,
GOP
but I,
used to be respectable.
But I want to go back to something that Larry said, angry. He said, when are we as a society going to cleanse ourselves or purge ourselves or whatever the phrase was of this? And, you know, in a way, that's the right question, but in a way, it's also the wrong question, because you have clear majorities through polling on a nationwide basis that want answers to the gun problem, that want solutions to the gun problem, that heartily disapprove of racism and bigotry and all of that. But when it comes to crafting a solution inside government, well, we fail. Because
yeah, well, you know why? I mean,
well, right, because the Republicans are put there by people who do not who are not their constituents. The constituents are just herded into voting for them through manipulation of the media and manipulation of, you know, frankly, their tiny little right wing minds. And they go and they do, you know, their master's voice, you know, just the dog sitting there by the Victrola. And the masters are the Koch brothers and the Sheldon Adelsons and the Wayne LaPierres.
But what Homeboy said was right, though, because he brought up the fact that the entire economy is geared towards war. He's totally right. It's geared towards, you know, I mean, come on. Does anybody really think that, you know, Corrections Corporations of America is going to say, wow, man, you know, we've been doing wrong by, you know, jacking up all these people and putting them in these goddamn cages. You know, we're not going to do it no more and throw away all these billions of dollars of fucking profit. They're not going to do that. You know, Upton Sinclair made it very clear. You control a man if you control his paycheck, if you can control his wages. He has to eat. He has to, you know, be able to manage. Everything has to change. You know, it's not just our attitudes, but everything would have to change. Everything would have to change. And then we'd have other problems. What are we going to do now with all of these cops that are not out there pushing their weight around, with these soldiers, with these private military contractors that would be pushing their weight around? That's one social problem. We're already dealing with these vets that are coming back jacked up, right? How much money is that going to cost that goes out but doesn't come back? That's money that's wasted. You know, there's nothing here keeping the infrastructure going. And what he said is totally correct. You know, how do we make that change? Because as Bernie Sanders has put it, if we make any of these changes, the whole system has to change. The whole thing has to change. Not just attitudes, but the whole thing is going to have to change. You know, and people who are used to having things, they're going to fight us, of course, on something like this. And those who think that somehow in the future that if they, you know, hit the right number, that their luck will change and they'll be rich and they can look down at, from the tower at everybody. That's really our biggest opposition. Those people who think that somehow, somewhere down the line, they're going to get lucky and they're going to be able to play God. There's a lot of delusional people who run around like that. A lot of men who still think like that in terms of women. A lot of white people who think like that in terms of race. You know, the idea you have to be on top of somebody, I have to be better than somebody, and if someone else has to pay a price for that, well, then that's just okay because I have what I have, and that's all that matters. It's pure selfishness. We would all have to make a change. Any revolution talks about everybody giving up whatever the fuck they thought they had that was coming in order that the masses can benefit from it. How many of us are willing to do that?
Well, the point is it would be great to be able to move to some kind of workers' cooperative or worker self-directed enterprise.
Well, that would be cool as long as there's a profit a margin, because that's what really screwed things up in the Eastern Bloc and in Russia, because they were more concerned with production and really didn't have any kind of reasonable incentives to really get people to do a little more than what they were required to do. They were so busy trying to keep the numbers straight. A lot of things, economically started to to collapse from the inside. I mean, not that they were falling apart, but it wasn't helping the situation either. I mean, that's just one thing that needs to be thought about, economically speaking.
Oh,
well,
hey,
only that, Angry, but if we look at the climate change number, we cannot expect to cut our CO2 emissions around the world until we change our lifestyles. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to change their lifestyles regarding climate change either.
That's right.
Hey, this is, as I expected, another scintillating Friday on the Front Porch conversation. I need to interject something, though, real quick. I had a note coming in from our dear friend Joan in Talibandiana. As I mentioned earlier, we're trying to raise $340 this evening, and we are thus far $340 behind in it. Well, I just got a note from Joan. She said, "Hey, fellow Hornedanistas, I'll match up to $150. This is the giving season, after all. Come on, guys and gals, make me pay." So there it is. The next $150 that come in get doubled, courtesy of Joan in Talibandiana. And it is it's no joke to say that it is badly needed. I hate to interrupt a good conversation with this kind of thing, but damn it, it's about the only way. It's about the only way we do it. So there it is, $150 challenge on the table, courtesy of Joan in Talibandiana. And thank you so very much, Joan. Thank you so much for doing that, because you know we've made a lot of progress this year here at the Horn, especially in terms of going forward into the future. There's still more stuff to be done, but we've made a lot of progress. And the one thing that I would dearly love to do going into the new year, and we got basically, 27 days to do it in, minus a couple, is I'd dearly love to get completely caught up on everything and be at zero come January 1. And this is a good step forward in that direction. So hopefully people will respond to Joan's kind offer.
Well, Bob, let me jump in here. I'm sorry I can't go quite as far as Joan, but I will match Joan dollar for dollar up to 100.
Okay, that's wonderful. And then maybe somebody will match you.
So it'll be three. If somebody donates one, she'll put in one and I'll put in one. So it's a 3-1 up to 100, and it's 2-1 after the 100.
Exactly. Although, you know how it is with me and gazettas, right, Roger?
Yeah, I know that, but I remember that a couple of us did this the last time. I think we got it up to a 4-1 match on something a couple of months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm willing to go the two.
Well, I can't jump in, and Bob knows why.
Yep. No jumping from you, Sparky.
I don't even have a credit card, so.
No. I understand. But hopefully, this might be a good time for me to mention something else. I received a little parcel in the mail today. Those of you who were listening when I was filling in for Mike Malloy a week ago Wednesday might have heard my conversation with the brilliant ecological magician Steve Trash, and heard a few of the tracks off of his really amazing Green album, which was produced in conjunction with some of the most brilliant session musicians in the entire United States. Well, I got a couple of copies of the Green album. So they're there if somebody one of them's there for the next person who matches Roger, and another one for anybody who carries that forward, and that'll be two, and make sure I've got a name and an address to mail them to. You're going to enjoy the heck out of this. I mean, this is...
I'm going to sweeten mine up a little bit, Bob.
Okay.
Anybody that comes up with $10 or more will get 5 Gete Okasaman squash seeds. And I did a germination test, and 14 out of 15 germinated. So if I kick out about 10 seeds for a $10 donation to you, they'll be sure to have some growing in their garden.
And they did turn out right tasty, didn't they?
Oh, yes.
Bob, it's Billable Rick here.
Hey, Billable Rick.
I'll throw in 50 tonight.
Awesome. So between you and between you and Roger, that is a that's
150.
Yeah, that comes to 150, which matches Joan, which then maybe we can carry.
No,
that
no, forward. No, it doesn't. No. You're missing. Joan's going to kick in 50. Rick's going to kick in 50, and I'm going to kick in 50.
No. Joan's kicking in 150.
If it gets matched.
Right.
I said I'd pay what Joan pays.
Okay.
I guess it's too complicated. Screw it. I'll pay it 100.
No. If that was fit. No, that's cool. That's cool. So, no, make it fit. No. 50. So one more and we're golden. Right? Sort of. Only you want that matched as well.
All right. What I'm saying is Joan said she would match up to 150.
Right.
I said I would match Joan up to 100. Rick came in with 50.
All right.
So Joan's going to kick in 50, and I'm going to kick in 50 now.
Okay. So what's got to happen next?
Somebody else has to kick something in, and between Joan and I, it gets doubled up to the 100, and then it only gets, well, it gets tripled to the 100. No. If the next person kicks in 10, Joan will kick in another 10, and I'll kick in another 10.
And then we'll be?
Well, then we'll be making money. Now, the question is, Rick, do you want some squash seeds?
Sure, I could use some, Roger. I don't know if I'm much of a green thumb, but I can give it a shot. Maybe my dog will dig up the seeds, but I'll try not to let her do it.
Or you can give them to some other people. Tell you what, fly your address to Bob, and Bob will send it on to me.
Okay.
Bingo.
That sounds great.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
Okay. And
I don't want to give my address out over the air.
No, I don't want anybody to ever do that.
Well, Agent Fred doesn't need to know. Well, he already knows.
Actually. And you never know. You never know when people are lurking.
Yeah, right.
Little wing nuts can be nasty.
Yeah. I don't have any great desire to have to get a concealed carry permit or something like that. You know.
Oh please no. Let's don't and say we didn't.
Yeah. Exactly.
because frankly, you just don't have the voice for hollering Wolverines.
I don't have the reverb either, Bob. Hey, can I switch the topic just a bit?
Absolutely.
Has Gerald won the lottery yet for tonight?
No, Gerald has not won the lottery for tonight.
Okay, well, there's a really good show on Amazon. It's produced on Amazon, very high cinematic quality. It's called The Man in the High Castle, based on the novel by Philip K. Dick. And it's one of these counterfactual historical pieces where it presumes that Hitler had won the World War II. And what apparently had happened is you hear all sorts of interesting details. What they basically do is they carve up the United States. East of the Rockies is basically the Greater Nazi Reich. And then west of the Rockies is the Pacific American states, or I think it's the Japanese American states or something like that. And then in the middle there, in the mountainous region, you have like kind of a no man's land where there is no law. It's like a neutral zone. And you learn things like, FDR was assassinated, a nuclear bomb was dropped on Washington, D.C., which caused the Americans to surrender. All sorts of interesting things. And you actually also see depicted a speech given by like a, I guess by then, this is like by about 1960 it's based on, circa 1960. And you see like an elderly Adolf Hitler giving a speech during VA Day, which is Victory Over America Day. And Americans, instead of celebrating the 4th of July, by shooting fireworks off on Victory Over America Day, they shoot fireworks. So it's just very, very well done. It's Ridley Scott is the executive producer. It's one of his projects, and just a fascinating plot. I'm enjoying it thoroughly. I recommend it to anybody out there.
I didn't know Philip K. Dick had written anything like that, and I've read a good bit of Philip K. Dick stuff.
Yeah, no, this is definitely Philip K. Dick. It's very, you know, it's a very interesting, you know, show, you know?
So, I mean, so it's not a movie, it's a series?
Yeah, it's like a series.
It's on Amazon Prime.
Yeah. I'm up to like episode 7, I think.
And the name again?
It's called
The Man in the High Castle. The High Castle, yeah.
And so it basically follows our heroes, the, you know, the true Americans rather than the Nazi Americans, you know. And it shows how they became radicalized. One lady, her half-sister got killed. Her live-in boyfriend had his sister and two of her kids killed because of their Jewish ancestry, like, you know, two generations ago, one of those deals. And so the whole idea is that they're smuggling these films, which are considered contraband by the Nazis and the Japanese, to the Man in the High Castle. And these films basically depict scenes from World War II, such as, let's say, the Americans raising their flag over Iwo Jima after the victory in the battle there. And it depicts the Japanese, the emperor surrendering to MacArthur on board, you know, what was it, the USS Missouri or something like that, off the coast of Tokyo Harbor, and shows images like this. And the idea is that, the world can be a better place. It can be, things can be different, basically. And so that is what, that's what motivates the American resistance to, you know, the fascist regime. But it's, I'm sure you'd love it, Bob. This would be right up your alley.
Oh, I'm going to start watching it, something approaching immediately, and I appreciate the recommendation. In a way, it reminds me of that great HBO film, and I go back and watch it periodically just because it's so damned interestingly made. Rutger Hauer was in it. What was the name of it? It's a post World War II Germany where, you know, they win, and it all centers on an impending visit to Germany by President Joseph Kennedy, JFK's daddy, who loved him some Hitler.
Oh, really? He was a Hitler sympathizer.
821, jeez. Gerald, 821.
What is it about rich industrialists that attracts them to Hitler? I guess because
it's not that they're attracted to him personally. They were attracted to the political and economic philosophy of fascism.
Right.
You know, as the old saying goes, Mussolini made the trains run on time.
Yeah. Plus, profits are very good in under fascism because you don't have real unions. You know, unions are destroyed. Workers don't really have any rights. The boss man can pretty much do whatever he wants to do as long as, you know, he's paying his taxes to the, you know, to the Reich or whatever, you know.
But see, that's a real historical fact. We have often, this country has often gotten in bed with fascists as quickly as they could pull the sheets back, because we love the way, from a business standpoint, from a corporate standpoint, we love the way fascism works.
Yes,
because among other things, it doesn't tolerate workers getting all uppity and demanding things like living wages.
Right.
Because if you do, you get taken out and taken care of.
Right.
I mean, going back to what dominated my conversation last night, look, Don Blankenship is a fascist, okay?
Straight up.
All right? And the system that allowed him to get away with what he got away with is essentially fascist. Can I get another straight up, Angry?
Yeah, straight up. And we can go even further. Look at what happened with Sandusky and Joe Paterno
we stopped it at Joe Paterno because I wrote about this. I can't find that fucking piece on the net anymore. It's gone. But I put it, I said, we need to stop the Republican Party because the Republican Party machine in Pennsylvania, the fascist party machine in Pennsylvania, knew that Jerry Sandusky was a serial fucking abuser. And Joe Paterno was told multiple times by another group of fucking adults who didn't do any goddamn thing that this motherfucker was a serial goddamn abuser. And the Republican Party, in my piece, I pointed out from what I could find, which was not hard to goddamn find, is that they felt that if they did anything to Sandusky, they would have lost the public support that they were getting for the sports program at that goddamn school. And that would affect their funding in terms of when they ran for office, those particular Republicans from Pennsylvania who were part of the whole Penn State funding funnel, that they wouldn't be able to get as much as they wanted, much less needed, if it came out that this motherfucker was under their watch and doing this shit. So he was allowed to get away with it, and the Republicans in that state who talk all the morality crapola were part of the fucking cover-up. And when Joe Paterno died, they let it die with him. And they stopped it, and they didn't finish any more fucking investigations. How did he get away with doing that for so goddamn long, and nobody fucking stopped him? The Republican Party of Pennsylvania knew about it and covered it up. That's the type of fascism that we're talking about. That's the type of fascism that we're talking about.
But it's also a fascism that says that if you cheat on Wall Street, it's a bigger crime than if your cheating leads to the death, the incineration deaths, okay? I mean, I remember years ago, I had on this program the sister of one of the victims at Upper Big Branch. And she struggled during our conversation to keep it together while she talked about the realities of what had happened to her brother and 28 other human beings. Okay? I'm not trying to sensationalize it. The facts are out there to be found by anyone who wants to see them or know them. But when she told me that evening, you know, the rescue crews flew into that mine because they're miners too, all right? And without comment on whether or not we should even be mining coal in the United States anymore. These are working people, okay? These are the working class. Even if they were making $100,000 a year, they're still working class. If somebody else signs your paycheck, whether you're a miner or LeBron James, you are, by God, working class. Now, maybe people don't like to think about that, but it's the damn truth. But those miners rushed into that mine, going headlong, trying to find where they were, where those 29 men were. And they were, and some of those men were so incinerated that the rescue crews ran right past them, never even recognizing that what was there used to be human beings. This is a direct and proximate result of the policies of Don Blankenship, who had a who once, when other men were killed, was found to have infamously authored a memo that said, "If you ain't moving coal, you ain't working. We don't have time to spend on safety." Who had a motto, a personal motto of "work like you mean it." And it's not just mine safety laws, okay? Mine safety laws, any workplace safety laws, are of fairly recent vintage. Going back to the earliest part of the 20th century. You know, Bismarck invented the concept of workers' compensation, or Bismarck's government did, in late 19th century Germany.
in large part as a result, as a response to the revolutions of 1848. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, it makes its way across the Atlantic finally to the United States in tepid little bits and pieces. Over the course of most of the 20th century, something approaching 100,000, mostly men, were killed in coal mines, mostly in Appalachia. Okay. And when the government finally created the Mine Safety and Health Administration, MSHA, which operated alongside the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, the Congress created criminal penalties for violating MSHA's requirements. And those criminal penalties carried greater punishment for screwing with the money than they did for killing human beings. And all that was a manifestation of standing American policy. That's all it was. It was a restatement of how things had always been.
Yeah, property first, and we'll sort people out afterwards.
Well, cultural studies moment. Remember, you know, when when Sylvester Stallone used to make really good films, because, you know, he's a damn good screenwriter when he wants to be. But he did two films, one called Paradise Alley that was about the Depression and how the conditions were there, in the U.S. at that time. But the other one, help me here, Bob, it was about Fist. F-I-S-T. It was about the unions.
It was like Teamster thing.
It was the Teamsters, yeah. And they were showing, you know, how they had to get the mob to use for muscle because the factory owners, the business owners, they were using muscle. You know, how we got to that point. People don't, you know, they don't realize when you talk about working class, Brother Bob, you know, how many people had to die just so people could get any kind of benefits that you even had a regular job to come back to. You know, instead of just replacing, you know, just day work. And, you know, they used to when they wanted to. You didn't know how much you made. You had to work 18 hours sometimes, those men. And if they didn't show up the next day at the right time, they just replaced them with someone else. Folks, you know, that's not taught anymore. Most of my friends' children have no idea that there was a labor struggle here. They think that there was always insurance and a 40-hour work week. They think it was slavery and then it got to this system. Ask your friends' kids. Especially if they're in their 20s, what they're teaching them now in college. That they do not discuss the labor movement in the United States at all. In the Western world at all. It's not mentioned.
Anywhere.
Yeah, but they're all taught about finance and business administration and all that kind of jazz. And
well, it serves the cogs of the current machine. But, you know, why would you want them to realize that, you know, people out here fighting for $15 an hour, which is still not really going to help too many people, but it'll be a little better than what's going on. They don't understand what they're talking about. Donald Trump and every other motherfucking GOP bastard just said that everybody's making too much money, except for them, of course.
Right, right. Let's reduce the minimum wage, right? Let's not increase it. Let's reduce it or eliminate it, you know?
Hey, they'd like to get away with paying us a dollar a day.
Speaking of unions, can anybody think of what's wrong if I said, let's say, U.S. Chamber of Commerce is a union of businesses, even before you call businesses people? Is there something wrong? What's wrong with what I just said?
Nothing. I used to use the same comparison when I was an organizer.
Oh, yeah, and the same thing for the American Bar Association and the same thing for the American Medical Association.
I used to go around the job sites and say, well, your contractor has a union. Why can't you have one?
Okay.
Hey, why are there police unions?
I mean, it's obvious. Has it ever gone to court or anything? Or
Well, I mean, it's not the kind of thing that's really necessarily justiciable.
Yeah, I think I get that. It's, yeah. A company has the power to try to not make a union form. And then what would be the power over corporations to make them not get together? Well, hell, you know, that was what antitrust was basically, wasn't it?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, you know, I hope I'm not crackling again now, but...
You're okay, Larry.
All of these... American Medical Association, as Bob was saying, the Bar Association, they've all combined in order to use their united, strong, capacity to organize together to stand or to oppress the working class. Because if they didn't organized together, then they wouldn't have, number one, obviously have the power that they do, and number two, they would be more susceptible to being toppled if workers tried to fight for their rights, because workers would be able to, and I don't even think I'm making sense, but workers would be able to collectively bargain or be able to go to another job and not have to worry about whether or not there would be a not a free market, but there would be ways in which workers could go to another job and not have to worry about whether or not it would be losing wages, and not worry about whether or not they were going to price another, I'm sorry, can you help me with this, Bob, or angry, can you help?
Larry, it sounds like most union dispatches in building trades. I mean, we go to jobs, all the other jobs, or I did. I'm retired, so I no longer do it. But that's the way a union dispatch works.
But I was wondering if Bob could help, or Bob or Angry or Rick or somebody here could clarify what I was trying to say to Jack.
Well, I don't know. The first thing I thought of, and it may be tangential, I was thinking about the Yellow Dog contract. But that's where a worker promises not to organize and not to do anything to upset the company. And if they do, they're fireable immediately, and they get blacklisted and never work anywhere else in the area again.
Right. Okay.
But that's not what you were talking about, is it?
Yeah, I was trying to explain how it is that what the purpose of Bar Association or the American Medical Association or the accountants. Association.
All right.
Forming a trust in order to keep workers down, in order to keep them in line, so that workers wouldn't be able to.
Larry, I think I think there's two different things that you're talking about. First of all, what you just mentioned were professional associations, and the purpose of the ABA, AMA, the CPA Society, is not necessarily to keep workers down, but to further the interests of the profession. Okay. Whereas I think what you're trying to get at is the industrial associations, like the business associations, like the national chamber of commerce and organizations like that. To some extent,
or the business roundtable.
Yeah, or the business roundtable, or the Club for Growth, or whatever. Any number of these trade organizations. Their purpose really is to further the interests of the industry, but also to further the interests of the employer,
and to maintain access to the profession. Okay.
Yeah. Because
the AMA dictates how many new medical students are
admitted. And the AMA, unless I'm told otherwise, largely dictates what the curriculum will be like. Okay? The brutalized form of medical education that we have that includes sleep deprivation and everything that goes with internship and residency and all of that. There's nothing that says it has to be that way. But there has to be some sort of rigorous out-screening of people who might not want to play the game that way. And so, you know, you let X number of people in based upon test scores in many instances that probably have an undercurrent, as most standardized testing does, of racism and bigotry.
That's right.
And then you make damn double sure that by the time they do get out the door at the other end, that they get out the door at the other end firmly and thoroughly and completely indoctrinated in your organization's way of thinking and way of operating. I can't speak for Billable Rick, but that's what it felt like. That's what it felt like when I got done with my cup of coffee at Harvard on the Mon.
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate, Bob. I mean, it's basically I guess the professional organizations also serve. They're sort of like guilds. They try to limit entrance to the profession.
Exactly.
And by doing that, they keep the prices higher. They make sure there's a shortage of professionals that are available, so that the professionals who get into the club can make more money.
But you know, I'm surprised no one's mentioned. I'm sorry if I cut you off, but I'm surprised no one's mentioned this. His question is right, or his statement is right, because while, say, the Bar Association comes around to prevent just anybody from popping up and saying that they're a legal professional within their jurisdiction, right, or wherever they tend to work, they pass the exams and they're registered and that. I mean, all of what we're talking about can be related basically to the legal profession. When you have a revolution or when you have a coup or what happens after they get rid of the actual head of state and maybe wriggle around with the military? What happens next? You start getting rid of all the lawyers and you change the entire view of things. Why is John Yoo still able to walk around? He's a war criminal. He made it legal under United States law to allow what happened. Well, actually, what's continuing to happen, right? How many of the lawyers and psychiatrists and other medical professionals, their unions were fully aware of what they were doing? Their associations were full, their guilds, but that is the correct term, right? Were fully aware of what they were doing and came around in hindsight and said, oh, well, you know, you shouldn't have done that. But they didn't do anything to stop it in the meantime.
Yeah, the American Psychological Association was extremely involved in that whole thing. In fact, I think they're one of the presidents of the organization was hired by the U.S. government and paid a great amount of money to basically teach, you know, torture techniques, or at least to show the psychological effects of torture and what they
those, I mean, we talk about John Hughes and unindicted, and George Bush is unindicted, and Dick Cheney's unindicted. That Human Rights Watch report that came out earlier this week points specifically at those two chuckle knots, sort of psychologists who had no damn background whatsoever in the applied psychology of that sort, and said, "Well, hell, why don't you strap them to a board and stick their head in a toilet?" And were paid millions of goddamn dollars for saying it. And are still making money off of it.
This is a question, since we're talking about psychology and stuff, I'm wondering whether or not the way in which psychologists are trained and the kind of therapies that they do in this society are thoroughly developed in order to perpetuate the status quo, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant belief systems, and whether or not they're there, and they say that they're trying to make people
you know, healthy and stable. But what they're actually doing is they're actually perpetuating an unjust economic, political, and they're actually perpetuating the, you know, they're not radicals. They're basically conservatives. No matter
I think that's a no-brainer, Larry.
Well, okay, we're talking about unions. I mentioned it earlier, you know, police unions. Police unions say, hey, you can't have a police officer be questioned by anybody, by internal affairs, by the mayor, by anybody, a reporter, anybody, for 72 hours. We need to have 3 days to perfect our lie. That's what their union is about. You have corrections officers' unions. CCA, I mentioned them for a reason. They said, oh, it would be terrible if Florida closed down these prison systems if they want to change the marijuana laws. That means that our men would have to look for work. That's a quote.
And yet, if you shift over to the teaching profession, when there was a shortage of teachers a few years ago here in California, they did not increase the wages to bring the over 20,000 people in California that had a teaching credential that chose not to teach back into the profession. They said, oh, if you're in your third year of college, we'll issue you an emergency credential and plop you into a school district without having finished your degree nor taking the courses in how to teach your subject. They undercut the association totally. Now, they didn't take anybody that had graduated with a degree in biology and say, we're going to make you a temporary doctor. They didn't say somebody that went out of college, we're going to make you a temporary lawyer. No, they said, we're going to make you a temporary teacher so that the teaching profession can't have the same power that the AMA or the California Bar or these other ones or the Chamber of Commerce did. So this thing about the hierarchy choosing which professions they want to screw with is very, very true.
Well, look, they've been trying to push privatized schooling. I mean, Ted Cruz wants to privatize the entire U.S. Educational system. So does Paul Ryan. They don't believe in state prisons. They don't believe
quite,
in state
that's
schools.
That's not quite Jeffersonian education idea.
No, but they don't know anything about that. They don't care about that. Sell it all. Sell everything. Sell the water. Sell the land. Sell it to a handful of rich people who will then decide what they want to do with it.
Oh, hell
John
yeah.
John Jay said.
I mean, I don't know if
it's owned the country.
Yeah, and Hamilton was down that road too. And I don't know if you've heard him angry, but I know Roger will identify with this. When Dr. Bill gets talking about Jefferson and education and talks about his theory of raking the rubbish.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. Because
it's on the state of Virginia. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, look, I mean.
Because see, there's nobody in this room that isn't raked rubbish. Mm. Because.
Well, look, man, you got people who vote Republican near me. They have nothing, Brother Bob. They live in the trailer home, areas over here. They don't have very much going for them. Some of them used to have pretty good jobs, but, you know, I've gotten to know some of them. And they're like, yeah, man, I'm here now because I can't do what I used to do, such and such. But you're voting Republican. Yeah, I know, because, you know, it just might, you know, we're leaving psychology out of this. Somebody mentioned psychology earlier. Psychology is a big part of this. Psychology is a big part of this. The majority of people in the Western world, not just the United States, especially the U.S., but in the entire Western world, the Anglophone world, do not think that there's anything better than this or there was ever anything better than this. And that's a really big, you know.
Well, and that's when you go down that Voltaire, that Primrose Voltaire path, you know, with Candide of this is the best of all possible worlds.
Hand gloss.
Yeah,
that's what I think. Leibonites, or have I got it mixed around?
No, but I mean, who said that? Where it fits in Candide is sort of irrelevant. But the idea, you know, some people read that and go, "Well, yes, it is." And other people read it and realize that there's a much darker, more sinister undertone to that statement. As in, well, it ain't going to get no better than this.
Yeah. And see, that's one of the biggest problems that I have. You know, this idea that, well, this is the apex of civilization. And I'm like, if this is the fucking apex, then we are in fucking deep feces. Because 5% of the population is in this country. 25% of the people who are incarcerated are in this country. And this country runs black sites, black prison sites all over the fucking world. But you're free. You shoot black men in the street here, unarmed, but you're free. You kill people on the border for being brown and speaking Spanish who are trying to run from the hell that you're causing in their country, but you're free here.
You come which takes us back to the which takes us back to the question posed years ago now by Dr. John. You know, how do we define, and you know, this is downright Socratic. How do we define freedom? Yes, we're free if freedom means the freedom to choose between 37 different kinds of goddamn breakfast cereal.
Well, I'm going to Patrick McGoohan school that freedom is a myth.
Well, you know, since we're talking about psychology, there's a new psychology therapy called positive psychology, or it's been since the late 90s. And it's based upon something about Abraham Maslow, but it's scientific. And the founder of it said, there are so many different opportunities and choices for people to, people who have money, to divert themselves. Why aren't they happy? But nobody ever.
Why are the maligned by Hillary Clinton Danes so happy that they often rank as the happiest people on the planet?
Yeah,
why is that? I mean, my God, they don't even have a bunch of guns. How can they be happy? How can they be free? I mean, you don't have people, Ron up in the only recently frozen north doesn't have people marching around with goddamn semi-automatic military style assault weapons strapped to their backs hanging outside predominantly black high schools. How can Canada possibly be free? Australia banned the goddamn things. How can they possibly be free? Oh, by the way, just
weapons, is what they'd be free of, Bob, and free of fear of being randomly killed by some psycho with a gun.
Hi, Rick.
But this goes back to the larger discussion of what does liberty mean? You know, I'm in the middle of reading this wonderful book called SPQR by Mary Beard, and she goes into an inquiry into the fact that, you know, with the Roman Republic, they concerned themselves not with freedom per se or with individual autonomy. They concerned themselves, and the people doing the concerning were mostly the people who had the money to be concerned, because if your daily lot in life was to be out there, you know, working a mine or even a scriptorium for some wealthy Roman, you didn't have time for this kind of crap. But they concerned themselves with libertas. And it comes down to us in the tree of liberty must be fed from time to time with the blood of nobles and noblemen and tyrants. And you know, there it is, the first thing with the French Revolution, liberté, égalité, fraternité, liberty, 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 sit, liberty, sit. And, that comes, Gerald Ford's dog was named Liberty. And I think that tells us so damned much. A couple of other notes to hit before we go out the door. Thank you very kindly to Jim and to Herman both, who reminded me that the Rutger Hauer HBO film was called Fatherland, and it's a dandy. And what was his co-star, Miranda Richardson, did a fabulous job in it as well. Also, a reminder from Michael and Madison for those interested in The Man in the High Castle. Michael says, I'm also reminded of the excellent faux documentary CSA, depicting American history from a British perspective as a documentary as though the South had won the Civil War and slavery remained legal into the 21st century.
In one segment, the CSA is portrayed as allies of Nazi Germany. Hitler visited the CSA and was welcomed with open arms. And as I recall, says Michael, he was given a tour of an American factory which used slave labor, and it was suggested to him that he perhaps consider enslaving rather than exterminating the Jews. It's a deeply disturbing but very interesting film, which I would recommend to any who haven't seen it. Last I checked, Michael says it was on Netflix. And I will add that if you watch CSA, and I'll this is a spoiler, every one of those ludicrous, outlandish, ridiculous product ad placements that are in that faux documentary was at one point in time or another an actual product for sale offered in the stream of commerce of the United States of America. And finally, going back to something that was said earlier, Steve in New York City says says of Paul Ryan and Ted Cruz, Raphaelito, they're not Jeffersonian, they're Ayn Randian. And I don't think there's going to be a lot of pushback on that either. So,
wasn't she a founder, Bob?
Yes.
One of our founding mothers of the
country? Well, you know, yeah. if the light strikes Mount Rushmore just the right way, you can see her nasty, craggy features in the stone even as it sits there uncarved. That's that's how profound Ayn Rand was. And huge thanks go out this evening to everybody who met and exceeded Joan's challenge. Thank you to Jack, and thank you to Dan, and thank you to Texas T, and thank you to the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansastan. Thank you, Billable Rick. Thank you to another anonymous contributor who prefers to remain nameless. I will say, all total, we have met and exceeded Joan's challenge, which is very, very important as we move toward the end of the year. Thank you, Joan, and thank you, everyone. So there's that.
So there.
Good.
We made it. And
we made it, yeah.
What was the
total hole going into the night, Bob?
The total hole going into the night was $340, and we are, I think we're $10 to the good, once I count in Joan's challenge itself.
Cool.
So that is deeply, deeply helpful and very, very important. And, of course, a reminder to everybody that, I don't know, will the group continue after this during Malloy, or will it pick up again in earnest after Malloy?
Well,
I had to step away. Sorry, everybody.
It usually goes on for a few minutes after you close your show, Bob. But then we usually pick up after Malloy.
We usually will stay on after 6 for a little while. Most people will go over to Malloy, and then we start up again at 9:05. And a varying amount of people come in and pick up the chat.
Isn't that what I just said?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Apologize.
Oh, and by the way, I had a note when we were talking about John Yoo and the other unindicted co-conspirators of torture. We left one out. Jude sent me a note, and she said, not to leave off, don't forget Jay Bybee, who resides on our Ninth Circuit Court here on the Pacific Coast. And then there's the psychologist Jensen, who also resided in Washington State. Oh, there is an abundance to go around, isn't there?
Yeah, and they put the prick on a pedestal the other day.
I saw a remark from Andy Borowitz saying, anybody out there want to get all downtown Baghdad on that thing?
Oh, you mean
the Cheney bus
and set up a pull down of that? There was a French reporter who was on top of a building about 4 blocks away.
in the French media who pointed out that it was only about 100 people, and they were being directed by the U.S. when they pulled Saddam's statue down. It wasn't spontaneous.
No, but the fact of the matter is we got one of Dick Cheney that sits in the halls of government now that needs something similar done to it. Or then again,
if
we
that doesn't say anything about the U.S., what will?
Or
then has some blood thrown on his bust there.
Well, no. That's where I was going to go, Rick. Yeah. I don't necessarily know that anybody needs to throw anything on it. I think we might just wait and see if it starts spontaneously leaking blood. Like Roman Catholic icons are so well known for doing.
Hey, it could happen. You never know. I mean, he is a true vampire, he's part of the living dead.
Yeah, but if that happened, they would deify him. They'd deify him. If it bled, they'd deify him. They would touch their Confederate flags to him to bless him.
Oh, you just got to do that kind of crap, don't you, Angry?
Toaster.
Yeah, old toaster.
Double toaster.
Yeah, I had a note from Steve in New York. He said, give my love to everyone, especially the Angry Indian. You know, you got your own fan club here, Angry, so.
Yeah, Angry Show is really good if anybody has the opportunity to listen to it. He comes on and gives a pretty good analysis and stuff. And then the last hour is usually a speech or something like that. And it's available on his website and also available as a podcast. For those of you that haven't
had the opportunity. At the URL, go ahead. I mean, you're in charge of the promo here, Larry. What's the URL?
Angry Indian. At blogspot.com, and it's
angryindian.blogspot.com, isn't it, Angry?
It's actually aboriginalpress.blogspot.com.
Well, we're going to get it right, by God.
I'm sorry. I'm just incompetent these days. I'm sorry.
No, you're not. No, you're not.
We'll put it on the Horn Facebook page.
Yeah, aboriginalpress.blogspot.com, right, Angry?
Yeah.
Cool. Hey, thanks everybody for joining in. We got to get right on out of here. It's Malloy time. So thanks to all the participants, and thanks to all of you who met Joan's challenge. And thank you, Joan, for making the challenge. I figure we probably would have ended up bupkis without it. And I really, really do appreciate everything that all of you do to keep all of this going. Thank you, as usual, Sparky, for moderating and maintaining this merry band. Thank you for jumping in, Billable Rick. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Roger, for all of your input. Thank you, Ron, in the recently frozen north. And thank you very kindly to the Angry Indian. These are rousing good conversations. And we'll be back with more Ann Monday. Well, you know, on Monday. That's how it works. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, yes, it's all for you. Good night, everybody, and have a wonderful weekend.